Thank you for checking out Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. It really means a lot to me that you're listening to this podcast. If you listen and you like the content, then make sure you subscribe, make sure you leave a review. Please do that. And also go check me out on some of my other platforms. I have a long-running YouTube channel. I've got a blog, theclinicaltrialsguru.com. If you're interested in becoming a CRA or you're interested in getting a career in this industry, go to thecraacademy.com. If you're a research site owner interested in getting more studies for your site or negotiating better contracts for your site, go to my blog, theclinicaltrialsguru.com, and check it out. I offer consulting services. If you're a pharma, biotech, life sciences company, a CRO, I own a startup CRO, and we're here to help you, whatever it is you want. If you're a CRO, we can white label a lot of services for you. We have CRA coverage across the country at cost. We can do this at scale. If you're a pharma company, we are a full service CRO, and we're very confident in our pricing, and we are extremely competitive at bidding. And if you're also interested in your own digital marketing and leveraging a podcast maybe for yourself, reach out to me, dan@theclinicaltrialsguru.com. Again, thank you very much and enjoy the show. Hello, Guru Nation. Welcome back to the Clinical Trials Guru. This is a long overdue, I mean, probably the longest overdue interview. Anna Marquez. Anna, I interviewed you at Skype, or Scope, 2 years ago, and the videographer screwed up, and I did like 20 interviews that day and got nothing. This is how many videos I got back from that. I would have been better off with my phone.
I remember that day, yeah.
Yeah, and we had a good one, too. I feel like we had a really good one. So you've been incredibly busy traveling the world. I follow you on Snap.
Yes.
Snap, Instagram. For those that don't follow Anna, you should probably follow her there. I'll have links to your LinkedIn, your Instagram, your Snapchat. We were trying to do Instagram Live, but it wouldn't work. So back to the Skype YouTube formula.
Back to the good old ways.
Yeah, old-fashioned Skype. So Anna Marquez, founder and CEO of Marquez Clinical Site Partners, right?
Yep.
In Florida. So you guys have an Orlando clinic. Mm-hmm. You have a Miami clinic, right?
Yep.
Can you give us some background?
Yeah. So essentially, Dr. Fakih, who's my partner, we started the first site in Winter Park, which is right outside Orlando, about 15 years ago or so. Okay. Doing a lot of sleep research, respiratory, now doing CNS, nephrology, different indications. And then we started opening up other offices, and it really happened by accident, kind of. It was other sites coming to us that weren't performing well, or physicians wanting to do research. And so we have the infrastructure. We've been very successful here in Winter Park. We've been doing, you know, phase 1 through 4. And so we just decided to, you know, start helping sites out. And so we've got about 11 offices.
So it's been all organic growth. So you never set out with the idea of, hey, I'm going to expand and, you know, have all these clinics and all these doctors. You just wanted one site. You know, the doctor you introduced me to earlier, he got you started. When was this?
Dr. Fakih opened up the first research facility in 2003.
Wow.
2003. Yeah.
Okay.
And at the time we were doing nothing but sleep research. I didn't know anything about research. I'm an accountant. And so I didn't get involved.
Your background?
Yes. Finance. Okay. I have a master's in finance.
Okay.
So I was, you know, I really didn't get involved until a few years later.
Interesting.
And so it's been wonderful for everyone, and we've got an amazing team here. So our goal is to basically take our expertise, you know, and help other sites. And not only that, we've actually had sponsors that have come to us when they've had sites struggling with enrollment or whatnot.
Which is all of them?
Exactly. a good number of them at least. And so sometimes they'll come here on site and, you know, we'll give them training, whether it's barometry or we'll tell them what we are doing to be successful with enrollment and share those little tidbits. So
interesting. Now, would you describe your company as a SMO or no?
No, I would say we're a network because each of our sites is truly independent, you know, completely independent, separate entities. And so they just, some of them we own. Most of them, you know, are owned by the physicians, the PIs.
Very similar to what we're doing. Wow, that's a good model. That's a good model.
Yeah, and then I do, I do negotiate contracts for sites all over the U.S. and Puerto Rico as well. So I've been doing that for a number of years now. And I mean, I've done several hundred negotiations now. So I've done many, many, many more since our last interview.
Yes, so. You have. That was in 2012, I think.
Yeah. So it's been about 6 years.
Yeah. And even then you had experience, but now it's like even more. And now you see the Sunshine Act. And they're trying to throw all these excuses at you and then negotiate.
Yes.
Yeah, it's all nonsense because at the end of the day, nothing has changed other than the tactics and what you need to know to say and how to negotiate. And you know, we work with a lot of sites just like you guys do through DSCS, and we have like a startup CRO now. But we're amazed now. And in our first interview, you told me most sites don't negotiate, and I didn't believe you. But I'm seeing it now. They just take what they're given, which is rule number one, don't do that.
We just took a site under our wing. They just came into our network, and that same situation. They've signed every single budget as it's come in. And I mean, it's going to be quite an experience now for those CROs because they're going to have to bring up their pricing. And we've been doing auditing for them and having to bill thousands and thousands of dollars in work that they've actually been doing and not being compensated for. You know, sometimes the sponsors or the CROs, they change how you enter the data.
Yeah.
And sites don't realize that, you know, we get paid to do things once. So that's actually one of the things that we've done with them is go back to the sponsor and say, hey, this site has done, you know, a ton of work having to re-enter data that they had already entered the first time. Now you've changed or redesigned how the data is entered. We shouldn't be doing this for free. So they said, sure, send us the hours. And so, you know, that's something that we're taking care of.
Yeah, I just did a video on remote monitoring because we had a site here in California, in LA, actually. They're on a remote monitoring study. And they are required to scan all documents, and they never knew that going in. So now they have people like this gentleman, Doc, right? He's out there uploading documents with one of their other coordinators. And they, you know, these are coordinators. They have other things to do, yet they're scanning documents. And guess what? They never put that in their budget or their contract.
Right. And that's something that I have a sheet that I send with every request, every budget negotiation. We send them a sheet that has all the invoiceables that we're requesting. And amongst that sheet is, you know, remote monitoring. A lot of times you don't get it, but sometimes you do get it. I mean, I just finalized the contract where we are getting paid for that. So excited about that. But, you know, I mean, things are just constantly changing and you have to keep up.
Yeah.
And as you know, most of the time sponsors will tell you no immediately, almost immediately on most things. But it's really on your documentation that makes all the difference. I often feel like I'm going to court. You know, I have to bring my evidence with me.
Yeah.
You know, and so I have a spreadsheet for how my startup is broken down, I got an email today, hey, you want this much for closeout, could you send me your backup? And I already have, you know, a spreadsheet with how many hours it takes to close out. You know, you have to pack the binders, the time for the PI, you know, you have to sign off on those final case report forms. I mean, you know, it's quite a bit of work. You have to ship documents, possibly to storage, So, you know, it's just, you have to have that documentation. I send it in immediately with my request, with my initial budget counter. I send the overhead policy, which explains to them why my overhead ratio is what it is. So,
We've been trying to get 40%, and I put it open. You guys probably get better than that. I mean, we have Chris, my business partner. He actually negotiates all the budgets. Now, I used to do this stuff, the first time we interviewed, but now I'm doing more biz dev and just a million things. But Chris does the budgets. He does like 10 a day now. It's crazy. He does a lot of budgets. He says if you can justify it, they'll accept it. And our overhead is 40%. Anyone who wants overhead policy wording, just email me and I'll copy and paste it to you.
Yeah. And I mean, I've read literature on overhead, and it seems to be all over the place. And it obviously also depends on the type of institution, like universities, hospitals. I mean, they can have an overhead rate of 70%. But when I look at a budget, and a lot of times they won't even put in any overhead. And, you know, you'll get these budgets with, here's the total for visit one, $1,500. Here's the total for visit two. And, you know, you ask them, what overhead did you build into this budget? Because you don't even know what overhead they built in. And sometimes you'll get a budget and they put in a 10% overhead. And I'm thinking, I mean, really, I mean, who has a 10% overhead? I mean, who even has a 20% overhead? You know what I mean? It's just, I think we just are not very good business people. We don't know our numbers. But really, you can take a look at your profit and loss for last year and see what your overhead is. You can find the answer there.
Yeah, the way I took mine, and anyone out there, welcome to do this, but I didn't even know what that was. Well, I started back in 05 full-time, and then I became an owner in 06. So I quickly learned all these things, and I just looked at local universities near me. What is their overhead policy? Because they're all publicly funded. They have
to. Yes.
I just took them all, combined them, and said, here, and I've never had anyone push back. I don't always get 40% of what I ask, but I always get something. And they've never had a problem with my policy. So it's not that difficult to put together. But if you're going to be in this long term, you should put together one for your institution, because you may have costs that other sites don't have.
Well, and for example, you're out in California. In California, we know cost of living is higher. You know, areas like Miami, New York. So if you know that you're in an area where your cost of living is higher, you know, use that to your advantage as a site. But what I've learned over the years is, you know, it's a give and take. Negotiating is a give and take. And sometimes they'll say, well, maybe I'll give you a higher cost per line item, but maybe leave the overhead at whatever, say for example 30%, and maybe the site is asking for more. So it's about compromise. You know, sometimes you get everything you want, very rarely you do, but it does happen occasionally. There's been times where I've gotten everything I absolutely wanted, and I tell you, I felt like I won the lotto, you know. So
and
it's
you have to be a good site to get everything you want too. That's one thing people probably, you know, you need to understand that Anne has been doing this since 2003. She's built a reputation as having a good site, so you can get more of what you ask for in your budgets. Other sites who are just starting out, you can't all the time.
You can't. So historical performance helps you. The other thing is, when you're negotiating for a network, it's also you do have more bargaining power. You really do, because you are negotiating for a number of sites, so that helps you.
So you know, you, that does help this. You. Chris does this too. So when you negotiate for, let's say, I don't know, like a dozen sites, or let's say half a dozen, right? Do you do it all at once, or do you go one by one?
Yes, we negotiate pricing negotiated for all sites across the board. Same pricing, same language for all sites, but obviously each site has their own contract.
Okay.
So, but we essentially negotiate the template, and then everybody benefits from that pricing. Now, one thing that sites need to be aware about there is the way the industry is moving towards networks. versus going to the independent sites. And I've already started to see that with some of the major CROs where they're going directly to the networks with projects. They don't want to have to deal with the one-on-one sites. And obviously it depends on the trial. How difficult is it, you know, to enroll? Because as you know, if they're doing a trial that's very hard to find patients for, they'll even be willing to give you the trial, you know, even if the site's never done trials in that indication.
Yeah.
So it all varies, but that is definitely the trend. And I mean, you can go to any industry conference and you're going to hear that. So networks are gaining strength.
Interesting. So and I are well positioned for this because we,
indeed.
We do that. Interesting. Cause, and now it's cyclical, right? Like
it is.
That is the case now. That's the trend now because I think for the next 7 years, we're going to have a surplus of studies. And so, of course, they want networks. But when that cycle reverses,
right.
I think the opposite is true because then they don't want to sign networks.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it's kind of like, you know, they went through a period where, you know, SMOs were big then. Oh, SMOs, not good. You know, bad reputation. Now
bad
it's
SMO.
Like, right, bad SMO. Now that's like coming back again, you know, where because they're finding that, hey, SMOs, networks, you know, they can give us the patients faster. You know, they know their sites. Like, we know our sites.
Yeah.
You know, we know who does well and what, and you know who's strong in what. So
CROs,
there's a lot of advantages.
CROs are the new SMOs. I've been told by 5 different people this year that are like high ups, key opinion leaders at these conferences, and they said CROs, the big ones, are the new SMOs. I asked why, and they said,
and they're getting into it. I mean, look at Quintiles.
Yeah, quality. It's all quality.
Or now IQVIA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or whatever they're called now. I mean, they're going to lose market share over time, and all these boutique CROs, sponsors are bringing all this stuff back in-house, and all these boutique CROs like mine. By the way, anyone that wants to start a CRO, I don't recommend it. I recommend a site. much more profitable, Anna. But for what we're trying to do, it makes sense to do the CRO. But if you just want to build a business in this industry, go for the research site, not the CRO. Much greater profit margins. But yeah, the big CROs are having the same quality control issues that the SMOs had in the 90s. So
yeah, I mean,
full cycle.
Yeah, it just comes and goes, right? Everything's in waves. But I think it's important for us to be educated and, you know, you got to move along with the times.
Of course, you have to adapt.
Got to move along with the times.
You guys
it's
are
like,
smart.
I mean, I was talking to a site this morning, and I mean, years ago when we started doing research, we were doing a lot of advertising in the newspaper, local newspapers. But I mean, even that is changing, you know, and you're having to constantly figure out, well, what works for my market, you know, what's my population. I mean, so you have to constantly, you know, have to move with. I mean, there's so much going on now, you know, exactly. You have to adapt. Look at how everything is tracked. You know, you go on Google. I mean, these people track everything. They know what you're looking for, what your age range is. I mean, they use all those stats to, you know, I may be looking at something for COPD. Next thing I know, I'm being targeted, you know, by COPD, you know, or getting COPD ads, or, you know, even CROs will come at me. So
it's
somebody's
world.
Buying all that data, you know.
A different world we live in. I read an article that said we could all use a little lithium. It's a funny title. So I bought some lithium on Amazon. And now when I went on Instagram, this was today, I went on Instagram and I'm seeing what I bought as an ad sent to me on Instagram. So that's how you're being tracked. And sites are
being
tracked too.
Everything we look at online is being tracked and somebody's buying that data.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and a research site owner might be watching this right now and saying, why are they talking about this? The reason we are is because you, my friend, are being tracked. Everything you do, how quickly do you enroll? How quickly do you screen after your SIV? Mm-hmm. How quickly do you answer queries? All that stuff's being tracked, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you better be doing things the right way. You know, they're looking at metrics. If you can imagine it, they're measuring it.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but they're using that information as well for advertising. This is what your marketing companies, you know, this is how they know so much information. They're tracking that information. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you got started, so you were in accounting before.
Mm-hmm.
And then your current PI. I
guess my current PI. Yeah, Dr. Fakhi. He's
Dr. Fakhi.
Dr. Fakhi, want to say hello really quick?
Hi, how are you doing? How are you doing? Thank you for introducing the research world to Anna.
Yeah. So, anyway. Voila.
So in 2003.
I'll take.
Yeah.
So in 2003, Dr. Fakhi.
Yeah.
Dr. Fakhi introduced you, got you into research.
Dr. Fakhi introduced me to research, yeah. I was his practice administrator at the time. So, but he always involved me on the financial aspect. And initially, I was just helping him put together, you know, financial statements and things of that nature. And pretty quickly, I mean, I had to get involved. I mean, I was always involved with the HR and issues like that. Then a few years later, he asked me to take over and, had to learn everything that I know now. And I'm very grateful for that. So,
but you never seen anybody that learns so quickly and take control of the situation.
No, I know. I know. I interviewed her, follow her on social media. She knows what she's doing. You're even involved with the SCRS, right?
SCRS, yeah, I've been involved with SCRS. Been on several advisory boards. Also with ACRP, MAGI, just all the different organizations, DIA, that are out there. I believe in collaborating. I think it's really important. Every problem that you have, somebody else has already had. So I know when I got started in this business, I didn't have anyone to help me. And so whenever I see someone that is struggling, it's just in my nature to want to help. So there's a lot of great information out there. But I think the one thing where you've been incredibly helpful you've been helpful in so many areas because your library is so massive and you cover so many topics. But the budgets and contracts is always just something that we can never get enough information on. And no matter, even if you've been doing this for 10 years, 12 years, 15 years, I still go to conferences and you can learn from people. You know, you may think, well, I've been doing this for 15 years. I've learned everything there is to learn. No, there's somebody else out there that is asking for something that is has never occurred to you to ask. For example, one of the newer ones that I just learned about is cancellation fees. Sites are now trying to get paid when a sponsor cancels a trial. Because, I mean, you know, there is work. Now, I've never personally gone after it. Fortunately, we don't have too much of that where trials are canceled. But although, funny enough, we just had one this week.
They're increasingly going to be more prominent.
Right. And so that's something new that I had not seen. So, like I said, I think you have to be open. There's people out there that know much more than you do. And I think there's a lot that we can learn from one another. And it just benefits everyone. You know, so yeah.
We're going to have both of you guys speak at the conference when we do it next year. 2019 Clinical Trial Guru Conference. BizDev, very important for sites, right? Business development.
Tremendously important.
That's probably one of the most important things, I'd say.
And you brought in your son, David, right? I follow him too.
Yeah. So David runs a site in Miami.
Okay.
Like I said, we have different sites. So he runs. So he's a director for Clinical Trials of Florida down in Miami. And he's done a really good job, with that site. So, yeah, he works with me. And Dr. Fakhi also has several family members. Yeah. We've had good experiences overall working with our family. And not always easy. Make no mistake, we've both had our challenges. But overall, it's been good.
Yeah, it's been good.
I mean, Dr. Fakhi's son is a PI now. for us. And years ago, when we were just getting started, he was a coordinator. And so now he's working with PI. So that's been very rewarding for Dr. Fakih.
Look at you guys. I mean, that's awesome. So who does your biz dev? Is that you, Anna?
So the BD, I do the BD, and then also we subscribe. You know, there's different things that you can subscribe to. And then also we pay companies as well. I mean, you know, there's a number of companies out there.
Yes, there are. I'm one of them.
Yeah, and basically, you know, if somebody brings a trial to us, I mean, and we don't know about it, I mean, definitely we're happy to. You know, I don't think you should you should be closing too many avenues on that. There are companies that I tell you I don't prefer to work with. Mm-hmm. I don't prefer to work with companies that take an entire percentage of the contract, or you know what I mean. I just don't. I do that as a last resort.
But that's, I got burned. Yeah. Early in the days, basically all the services I've built is scratching my own itch. So BizDev, you know, I was looking for people back in 05, 06, because I was doing the coordinating. I didn't have time to BizDev, and I know it's an ongoing thing you got to keep doing.
I was
asking consultants to do that for me, begging them, and they wouldn't do it. They were like, no, I only do QA. I know you need studies, but I don't do that. You know, but I charge $3,000 a month. And I said, well, okay, but I'll pay you that if you can also give me studies, because I know you have contacts.
Sure.
And they couldn't do it. So I said, you know, we're going to build that service ourselves. We're going to do it. We've been adding sites like crazy. But it's a constant thing. Even in a busy year like this year, this is the busiest year that researchers are going to have ever seen on record. But if you're a new site, you're not going to get those studies unless you know how to biz dev.
No. Well, one of the things that we do as a network that I think has been incredibly beneficial for our investigators is we train them. And so they'll come in here, and sometimes they start out as our sub-investigators. And so they get that initial experience. And that's also good for us, because we can gauge how involved they're going to be. Because, you know, it's important that you work with an investigator who's involved. It doesn't matter who you are, whether you're the CRO, you're the sponsor, if you're a network and you want, you know, you're going to bring on a site. We take a lot of pride in our work. And you don't want to work with an investigator that has no time to run the trial, because that's just, you're just looking for trouble. So
now, a lot of sites watching, they may be looking for physicians to add to their network. What's the best way to do that, in your experience?
Well, I think definitely, like Dr. Fakih is, I think he's the master at that. I mean,
well, you know, I've been here for 30 something years, so I know a lot of doctors and a lot of people, and I know who would be a good PI and who would not be. Mm-hmm. So really, you have to have a personal relation to start with.
Mm-hmm. I think that's important. Yeah, that's important you mentioned that, you know who, because if you ask a doctor, 9 out of 10 will say that they want to do research, but only people like us who know what it takes will be able to know, oh, this guy's not going to do it, or she won't be able to do it. So that's important when 9 out of 10 are going to think that they want to do it, and then you know it's very unlikely that this person's going to follow through with being a PI.
Well, one of the ways that you can tell very quickly if the investigator is going to be good, you know, for us, for example, everybody has the same training. And we have them also do the, aside from doing our own, we've developed our own training in-house, but we also have them do their city training. And, you know, that takes several hours. And so if you tell an investigator, do your GCP training, and weeks are going by and they're not getting their training done, I mean, that's a very quick way to know that, okay, this is I'm going to have a hard time working with this investigator, you know, especially if they're going to be a PI for you. So I agree with Dr. Fakih. I think first you need to try and tackle your inner contacts. But I have seen people find investigators through like advertisements on newspaper ads or whatnot.
Even Craigslist works too.
Oh, yes. So I know of sites that have found their PIs or expanded through advertising, you know, for the position.
And even if it's just a sub, let's say you get a very lucrative study, but it's a very specific patient population, and then you go find a specialist, and, you know, maybe they're not ready to be a PI, but you tell them you be a sub by and refer patients, you'll get paid for your sub by activities.
Right.
It's the same concept.
Mm-hmm. Right. So yeah, there's a number of ways you can go about it.
Now, okay, so we talk about biz dev, budget. We can spend an hour on each of these topics, but let's get into QA. And before I do that, Carrie has been like a fan since I started, right? she's with you guys. I've never met her.
She's my regional project manager. She's fabulous. Yeah.
So what's that? What's regional project manager?
So she oversees all the. She's regional director. So she oversees all the facilities. Essentially, some of the facilities are large enough where they have their own directors. Mm-hmm. Other sites, you know, we have sites in different stages. We have sites that are just opening up. There's mid-sized facilities, and then there's large sites like this one, like Dr. Fakih's.
Oh, okay.
And so, essentially, she oversees. You know, she helps me to oversee all the facilities. So
good, and we'll get into QA. But before we do that, you guys are like a model, because Miami, and I know you're in all over Florida, that is the most, by far, the most saturated site and the worst reputation, I mean, if I can just be frank, in research. Like, yes. I've had CRAs tell me, please recommend sites everywhere except Florida.
Yeah.
Numerous times.
Well, you know, initially when I opened up my site in Miami, I actually ended up having to change the name of the site because I found out that there were sponsors who didn't want to work with Miami sites. But news, good news, we're actually a preferred site for our sponsors. We've had fantastic audits. We've actually had sponsors say, hey, you are our best site here in Miami. So we've done, you know, we've done really good, but, you know, again, you have to have that QA component. All of the processes that we have built have been around what we know the FDA is looking for. I've done consulting as well in FDA inspection, so I know what they're looking for. And so I think we've just gotten very efficient at designing processes, and we collaborate and things of that nature. So, and David is a checklist. He's obsessed with checklists. So he makes a checklist for absolutely everything, even reporting an SAE, you know.
He sounds like Chris.
Yes, he makes these trees. If this happens, then you go to this. If this doesn't happen, then you go to that. So I think he read the checklist manifesto, so he's an absolute fan.
Oh, I've heard. I've been recommended.
Yeah, and
that
so
book.
Yeah, and so he's designed all kinds of forms as well, and I've actually said, David, I think it's time you consider maybe publishing, you know, a book or publishing some of these forms, because I think sites could really benefit.
Oh, yeah, he should, absolutely should. Center Watch is publishing things for $300 that provide almost no value. So, yeah, why not? I mean,
So I've talked about that. But, yeah, so our sites have, you know, they have all these checklists from the minute a trial is awarded, checklist, you know, startup checklist. A patient's going to come in, we already have a checklist for everything that has to be done that day. So, I mean, you have to be very, very proactive with quality. There's just a lot of room for error if you're not careful, you know.
Yeah, and that whole Florida thing, really, it's to put to rest any excuses someone may have that's watching. Because we may have someone in LA watching or someone in Houston, which are also saturated markets, mm-hmm. and say, well, you know, I can never make it here because there's a site. And you know, they're from Florida. Like, you can't get a worse reputation than a research site in Florida. Right, but they've proven, like, this is 15 years now, right? If not,
No, and our sponsors are very, very happy with the work we've done. You know, they've actually come to us when they have very important trials, and they, you know, they'll say, we just want the 10 best sites in the country. You know, we need this data to be good. And so, you know, it's been an honor to be selected in Miami here in Dr. Fakih. I mean, Dr. Fakih has a stellar reputation.
Are you in Miami right now? Are you guys in?
No, I'm in the Winter Park. I'm in the Winter Park this year, yeah. Yeah, this week I'm here, so.
So QA, the checklist manifesto, someone recommended I read it, so I should talk to David about it.
Yeah. But also, I think it's very important that we have dedicated people for quality control, quality assurance.
Okay.
And so we do audits on a regular basis, and it depends on, you know, what you have going on, how big the site is. Sometimes we do audits twice a month, sometimes it's, you know, once a month. But I think it's really important that somebody's looking at that data, because that is the thing that's going to get you more trials. You did a good job, they're going to come back to you. You did a poor job, they're not going to want to work with you again. So, I mean, that's important. So we've designed our own QA processes in here.
That is essential. I just came from a site audit, and you would be amazed at a brand new site. High enrolled. They enrolled 60 patients in a study, never done research before, and sure enough, they have all tons of issues. So they called on us to help clean up, and there's only so much you can do. But you know how they have the red light, yellow light, green light for sites? This was red, and now we made them like orange. So they're okay.
Well, you know, when you look at 483's issued, the longer a site has been in business, the better they perform.
Yeah, go figure.
So, you know, the newer sites have the greater issues. I mean, realistically, it takes a couple of years from what I've seen. It takes 2 to 3 years to get a site to stabilize. From the time you open up a site, it takes 2 to 3 years to really build a good team. You know, that those first couple of years, you may have some turnover. You may have ended up with the wrong person. I mean, it's not easy to build a successful facility. You have to be persistent. You have to be on top of things. You have to have an involved investigator. You know, I mean, really, as you know.
Go figure.
But you have to have someone that knows what they're doing and that is really on top of things.
One thing that is really helpful, if the site have an FDA audit right as they start, because that really puts you in the right way.
Nobody wants an FDA inspection, but I don't think there's any site out there that isn't better for an FDA inspection. You've been shut down, then you were doing some really bad stuff.
Yeah.
But it definitely pushes you to be a better facility. And there are sponsors that won't touch a site that's, you know, received the 483. But the reality is those sites are going to have better quality than sites who've never had an FDA inspection.
Of course, because they learn their mistakes. But, it's so important. People think it's so easy to start a research clinic. Like, they watch a few videos on YouTube, and then they call me, and they're like, hey, you know, I want to start making money. A lot of them are from Miami. I want to start making money. I got doctors. And I'm like, you realize it's March 2018. If you start today and get a study tomorrow, you're not making money this year. It's 2019 you're making money. Yeah. And they don't like that. They're like, well, what are you talking about?
Right. Yeah, and I mean, you get people, you know, you get coordinators that, you know, they think, gee, I can just go and open up a site. Because I get calls as well from coordinators wanting to open up a site. But there's a lot. You know, just because you're a coordinator doesn't mean you're going to build a successful site, because the business component is so important. And we, like I said, we're clinical people. We're not good on the business side. And even today, I can't tell you how many sites don't have anyone looking at their AR. They have no systems in place for track of their invoices. It's just really crazy.
Do you guys use CTMS for that?
We do. We use we use real time, which we love. We use it at all of our facilities, but we also use QuickBooks. And it's, you know, we love using both, so we have a really good grip on our AR.
Are you doing that, or you have someone else doing that?
We have somebody in house full time that does it. So all of our sites, we keep that very well controlled. I can tell you that a site that doesn't have anyone doing their AR, you're probably leaving 10, 15, 20% of your gross on the table.
Oh, yeah. I learned the hard way also when I started. I mean, later I'm like, oh my gosh, I left so much money back there. But you learn, you know, some people pay to go to school for that, and others learn by losing the money.
One way or another. Absolutely. So, you know, you have to have someone that really knows, you know, what they're doing if you are going to build a successful facility. And I think, you know, we have a really good team here. You know, Dr. Fakih, I mean, he's the clinical guru, and he's a pro. And we've got great people, you know, that are experts in different areas. You know, I mean, I have expertise in the finance aspect of things. We've got people that are experts in recruitment, people experts in, you know, quality control, quality assurance. So you have to have, you know, and it takes
time. Components.
Yeah, and the thing is that with the smaller sites, they can't afford. A lot of small sites may only have one or two people. Sometimes the owner is the coordinator, especially when you're starting. You know, sometimes the ARMP is, you know, the sub-I, the owner, the coordinator. You know what I mean? I see all kinds of different scenarios, but it's definitely worth your while to talk to someone that knows what they're doing. And that's something that we started doing as a network as well, helping sites get their AR, you know, implement good AR processes, because we saw the need for it.
Yeah. What do you think about interns? So, because another audience watching, we have a lot of site owners or people that want to be sites, but we also have a lot of wannabe CRAs and CRCs, and I always tell them, go intern. And, you know, we have interns all the time. Like, right next to me right now is one.
Yes.
And, you know, how do you guys feel about that? Because, you know, sometimes they have to provide value, obviously, or else it's a waste of your time, right? Mm-hmm. So how do you react to interns? Like, what do you guys accept them?
We do accept interns. We accept interns in two areas, recruitment and also coordinating. Because some students, you know, want to get into research.
Recruitment,
and
Doc. Yeah. She said recruitment.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
he can't hear you, but I tell all the interns the best way to get into any research clinic is to tell them you're a patient recruiter. And then go figure out how to do it. Go get somebody. Go bring them a patient the next day.
Exactly.
Yeah,
you're absolutely right. For us,
I'm absolutely right, he says.
Yeah, the game changer for us have been to develop really a good recruitment and a strong recruitment department. We have five dedicated recruiters working here.
In this office, yeah.
In this office only. Because I think a good recruiter is worth the price, the weight in gold.
Their weight in gold, absolutely, really. Absolutely. Yeah.
So, and the interns, we do accept them here because a lot of the people that we have hired have been interns that have been rotated with us who that we have identified, which are very good, you know, that we have been able to give them full-time jobs here.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, right now we have three or four that as an intern that actually are now working for us.
Yeah, that they've been hired by other sites in our network, because as you know, Dan, finding good people, that's difficult in any field, but I think in research, because we're so heavily regulated and there's so much room for error and we have to be so OCD about everything, it's even harder.
And supply and demand. There's not that many people to handle all these studies.
Exactly. Very difficult to find a good coordinator. So, I mean, as a matter of fact, Dr. Fakih and I have been thinking about, you know, gee, maybe we need to open up a school or something, because, I mean, you talk to other site directors and they're saying, gee, you know, we need good coordinators. We need good training programs. And we've done so well here with the quality of our work that, you know, that's something that we're
can absolutely do. Yeah, we do the CRA Academy. And I, you know, we tell all of our students, if you join our academy, you're guaranteed an internship if you pass.
Right.
But for someone who may not be able to afford it, because it's $3,000, so someone may not be able to afford it, I tell them, go recruit patients at a site near you, and then they come back with all the excuses in the book. How do I find a site near you? Well, Google is one way. Right. And then you go to those sites in person, by phone, by email, by letter, by smoke signal, however you want to get a hold of them. Snapchat. You want to talk to Anna? Go on Snapchat. Go on Instagram.
Well, and the thing is that very, very rarely is somebody going to turn down free work.
Yeah.
I mean, oh, I don't know many people that are going to turn down, you know, somebody coming and saying, hey, can I do a free internship for you? Absolutely. No. By as a matter of fact, if anybody's out there listening, I'm looking for someone to help me with language negotiation. So if you want to do an internship, learn contract language, hit me up.
Contract language, like budget?
Yeah. Yes, for clinical trial agreement. So I'm actually looking
for... budgets and contracts? In Orlando. Too far.
He's probably saying no.
I'm
looking for someone to work with me long term to do contract and budget negotiations, but I'm looking for someone with some background in law, maybe somebody who just graduated from college with a degree in law or something
we'll
to that
effect. We'll put up your LinkedIn.
Because research is a highly specialized field. It's not easy to get into, and not that many people that know research law.
Right.
So, yeah.
Extreme and changes all the time, and then tactics used against you, like the Sunshine Act. It was never meant to be for research, but they're using it because they can get away with it. It's not meant to be for research.
Well, and they're using it as a tactic to try and keep your budget down. But the reality is the pharmaceutical companies are not reporting they're not reporting the line by line. They're not reporting how much they're paying you for an EKG. So that's just an excuse.
Right.
You know? They're just reporting the total. So
it's a sword that cuts both ways.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And the reality is no two sites are identical. You know, you may have a site that offers services that other sites don't offer, and so your overhead's going to be higher. You know, our coordinators have been with us on average 9 years. Some of them have been with us 13 years or CCRCs. When you've had somebody for years, they're going to be higher priced coordinators than someone that you just hired off the street. So, I mean, there's different things that you can have. You might be offering services that other sites don't have. Having a recruiting department, you know, that increases your overhead.
So we talked budgets, we talked biz dev, we talked finding PIs. Mm-hmm. What else? QA,
right?
Recruitment. So recruitment is another one that's always changing. I think the best way is to get more physicians interested in research with those patient population and then train them on research. It's much easier to do that, even though that's a lot of work, than it is to find somebody who's well-versed in research that also has a very niche patient population. That's harder. That's a needle in a haystack. What are some other things now? Because there's social media. I know you guys do a lot of experimenting. What works well for you? I know every indication's different, but what has been surprising you as of late, where you're like, wow, this works better than I thought it worked?
What works well for us is to have a good pre-screening
process
that we do. For instance, we do a lot of social media for asthma COPD. So all those patients that come, we see him on a pre-screening, and if they need something, they need some samples, we can give them. So we pretty much help them in the process, and if they are going to participate in one study, then we will build our database of that. So in a week here, we see 30 pre-screening for asthma, of which maybe 2, 3, or 4 of those might be able to get into study.
Okay.
But we are continuously doing that. But we get a lot of people from social media. I think that has been for us quite.
Yeah, because we hired a social media company that's managing that for us, and it's been wonderful. It's been absolutely fabulous.
Really? Send me their info after the interview.
Yeah, I'll send you their info. They're absolutely wonderful. It's been a huge difference. But also how you tackle recruitment varies. For example, are you tied to private practice? You know, if you tie to private practice, one of the things that your coordinator should be doing is looking at what patients that are coming in this week, what are they coming in for? That's an easy way. You know, you flag the chart and you say to the PI, hey, this patient seems to qualify for this trial. When you're talking to the patient, you flag the EMR chart. So there's different ways you can tackle it. If you're a standalone site, you don't have that. You have to rely more on referrals, advertising. So, you know, all of that changes. But definitely having a dedicated recruiter or recruitment team is going to make all the difference in the world.
Yeah. So again, anyone watching as part of Guru Nation, I keep telling you, it's not just me. All right. Now we get two other people telling you patient recruitment is the way to go. It's the best way to get into a site. But nobody does it because it's hard. Yep. Even after I tell them, they're like, well, but then how do I get the patients? And it's like, well, that's kind of what you have to do.
Well, that's why, exactly. Now, one thing that I wanted to clarify is, you know, we do these pre-screenings, but we actually have a generic IRB-approved informed consent that allows us to bring patients in. And so under that generic consent, we cover that, hey, we can do spirometry, we can do, you know, certain basic procedures, you know, like physical exam or, you know, so because we want to make sure that we are abiding, you know, by the guidelines.
Yeah, so. the IRB thing is a whole nother. I mean, I could spend another hour on that when it comes to IRBs and social media. Because they're in the business of making sure that they stay relevant. And, you know, I argue that you don't need IRB approval when you're doing a generic advertisement about you building your brand that let's say you specialize in schizophrenia.
Right.
I don't think you need IRB approval, but if you ask 10 IRBs, you're going to get 10 different variations of yes, you do. Just to be on the safe side.
Right.
Let us send you what's the best email for your invoice to go to.
Right.
That's but study specific? Absolutely. You need the IRB approval.
Absolutely.
I think content marketing is going to be huge, like having podcasts like this. But imagine, let's say we had a asthma study and we just talk about asthma all the time, every day. Mm-hmm. I think you will get patients that way. And I don't think you need IRB approval for those kind of things because there's
not
doing anything, right?
Yeah, not for the generic stuff. Yeah, I completely agree with you. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so you guys, last thing is this is a long, thank you for your time, by the way. We can go on forever, but we'll do more.
Absolutely. Well, and I know Dr. Fakih is, you know, we weren't intending, but I'm grateful that he joined us. And so I just want to say, so Dr. Fakih is the CEO and founder of Florida Pulmonary Research Institute and Florida Premier Research Institute.
We've never met, but I have seen you on Snapchat, I believe. I think there was a birthday recently.
Yes, because
I watch Anna stuff. I haven't been posting
much recently, so which people are texting me, hey, are you okay, are you sick, what's going on, why are you not posting anything?
I sent you a snap like a week ago and I'm like, she still hasn't opened it, I wonder if everything's okay.
I'm very grateful that you had us on, and you know, anybody that has any questions, budgets, contracts, you know, I'm happy to help. Even if somebody's trying to start up a QA program, you know, we've got templates of everything and anything you can possibly imagine, and we're happy to share. And I mean, last time we did these interviews, Dan, I got so many emails from your followers, and I did my best to send them, you know, templates and things like that.
You're going to get way more because that was so long ago. and we still have people. The other day, somebody asked, hey, I want to, you know, where's this Anna lady? And I was like, that was like 6 years ago, but they're still watching it and they're still asking.
Yeah. And I think we should probably think about doing another podcast on, you know, how to negotiate.
Yeah.
Because that's really important.
Well,
it's not just, I can tell you, go ask for startup SAEs, amendments, IND reports, this, that, and the other. But if you don't know how to ask for it, you're not going to be successful in getting that.
Last thing. Conferences, I don't go to many.
Mm-hmm.
not because I don't think they're good, but I have a lot to do, and I think my time is better spent doing those things.
And they're very expensive. Very expensive.
And I wonder why, right? But so what do you think about conferences? Like, I know there's, if you really wanted to, you can go to one every week.
Yeah, it all depends on what you're trying to accomplish. From the BD perspective, you need to be in front of these sponsors constantly. You want to stay in their faces. So, you know, from that perspective, it's important. If you have a new team member, new director, if you're trying to provide education, you know, I think it's important. For example, we're now expanding into oncology trials. Mm-hmm. We've never, you know, oncology research for us is going to be new. It's so tough. We have to educate ourselves. So we're, you know, Dr. Fiki and I have been talking about who needs to now go to conferences to get trained on like billing compliance, mm-hmm. right? Because the billing mm-hmm. for oncology trials is very different.
It's different, yeah. You're allowed to bill insurance. Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. yeah.
So I like that. Conferences depending on – it's not the same conference every year. It's depending on what your needs are at that time.
Right, depending on what your needs are. If you're a site, highly recommend go to the SCRS conference. And now you're getting a lot of sponsors attending, a lot of CROs. So it's become a good conference for all kinds of stuff. ACRP has a lot of great educational stuff. So, you know, they all serve a purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're trying to make like the perfect conference, but it's going to take mm-hmm. a couple years to do it. So it's going to be a couple of mediocre conferences before we get that perfect one. But mm-hmm. I've always wanted to do it, and it's not to make money. It's right. to get everyone together.
Educate people. Right. And Magi is also another wonderful conference. I'll be speaking there. And they actually be doing a workshop on budgets and contracts.
Are you going to Vegas? In Vegas? Or are you doing the East Coast?
The East Coast.
Okay. Too bad you don't go to Vegas.
Well, I may be going. I'm not sure because, I mean, I spoke at the last one. I spoke at the West Conference.
Oh, okay.
As well. So if they invite me, I will be there.
The Guru, you're invited to the Guru conference whenever we do it next year. It's either going to be in California, Arizona, or Nevada. We don't know yet. Mm-hmm. Each state has its own challenges. California has the unions. You can't have somebody plugging in an electrical cord in an outlet without being part of a union. So right. we're not doing that.
Well, one of the things that I recommend when you do your conference, I can't tell you how many experienced sites reach out to me and say, you know, Anna, we need to have a conference or a track for the experienced sites. Because there's a lot of information out there, but the you know, different sites need to know different things. A site that is just starting out needs maybe basic information. A site that's been in business, like Dr. Fakis, for example, you know, the expertise is different. You know, you may be having, you know, although we all have different challenges, but you know what I mean? So I recommend right. maybe a track for the sites that have been up and running for a while. That
experience,
you know,
experience sites. Yeah, the site that has... Mm-hmm. The site that has no experience, they should stay in their site and do work.
Well, and they need to learn about everything. They need to learn about budgets and contracts. They need to learn about quality. They need to learn. I mean, they need to learn everything. You know, a site that's been in business for so many years, you know, you might be looking for different content. Mm-hmm. So, but I think budgets and contracts I think that's a topic that everyone.
Well, finds you're there. You guys will get VIP treatment. To wherever we do it in one of those three states.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for coming on. I appreciate it. If someone wants to get a hold of you, I'm going to have links to your LinkedIn. Okay.
Sure.
But let's say, what other contact do you want to give them? Or is that good?
You can also give them my cell number, Dan. I don't mind. But text me, please, because I get a lot of phone calls. And unless I recognize the number.
Wow.
I don't answer the
You're
calls.
You're going to change your number by April.
So they can text me. They can text. I mean, it's on my website. It's everywhere. If you just Google my name. Oh, yeah. I give my cell phone out to everyone. So I'm, you know.
The one I have, I feel less special now. Let's see here. What's your cell number?
You'll feel more special when I give you my super private one.
You have a suit.
I have a super private line that very few people have.
That's how you made it. She's got a generic number, but she has two cell phones, maybe more, but one for super private. So Hopefully, I have
David,
that one.
David just recently got that number. He was after me for that number.
I have Google Voice, and then I have my real cell number, but it's the same phone.
Yeah.
So what's your number? Where can people text
you? They can text me 352-266-2625. 352-266-2625. Again, you want to text me before you called me. So
they don't listen.
Well, you're not going to get an answer then. If you just call me and don't text me first, because if I don't recognize the number, I won't answer. I will return the voicemail.
You've been warned, Guru Nation. Thank you guys. I appreciate it. We'll talk a little bit off the air, but we'll have you guys on again. This is great. We'll do it again. And thank you everyone for watching. Stay tuned till next time.
Thank you everyone.
Thank you.
Good night.
So hey everybody, thank you very much for listening to another episode of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. Again, if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to this podcast. Make sure you leave a review, if you could be so kind, please. And also go to theclinicaltrialsguru.com if you're interested in learning more about who I am, who some of my guests are. You can have access to some of my YouTube videos. I do a lot of videos about clinical research. So go to theclinicaltrialsguru.com. And you can also call or text me anytime, 949-415-6256. Also follow me on any social media platform. It's Dan Svera. And you can also email me if you'd like, dan@theclinicaltrialsguru.com. Thank you very much.